Oh, yes, it is. Rich Shurtleff, Ken Laird, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson. A time of year that I'm sure, Ted, you remember this well, I'm sure. Summer is over. Time to go to work. What was that first day like when you arrived at campus? Like when you arrived at the camp to get ready for what was going to be a very, very long stretch of months? What's day number one like?
Ted showed up in a Batmobile.
I did not. Nothing. I came in not on a wing and a prayer. Well, pretty much a wing and a prayer, but nothing fancy. I came in just nervous as all get out because the first day of camp, Steve Diassi knocked on my door. He said, yeah, Parcells told me to come over and tell you that the incumbent linebacker named Todd Collins did not show up, and so you're going to be starting from day one, and so don't screw it up. And so I went into the bathroom and just threw up everything I ate for breakfast.
Oh, jeez.
And then went out and practiced, you know, and I just remember nerves, ball of nerves, man. I mean, the Patriots were turning a corner. You know, the 94 season, they had a really – you know, Bledsoe kind of had an outbreak season and a lot of high expectations. And so, and Bill Parcells was not an easy coach to play for. So, and then all of a sudden, the guy that I was competing with didn't show up. So there was a lot of pressure on me day one. So, yeah, I think I threw up before every single practice for the first week.
Damn. Oh, my God. Oh, well, yeah. A lot of people are going to be throwing up next week because it is the beginning of camp. And covering the whole thing is going to be our good buddy Tommy Curran from NBC Sports Boston. Tommy Curran, have you ever thrown up on the first day of camp by any chance?
No, and I love that story from Ted.
So
I never caught that after any practices, the vomit on the breath.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's actually a good question you could ask these guys. Like, you know, did you have any strange reaction on your first day out there? I have a feeling that...
there's rookies. You're going to hear... You go into the bathroom before practice in these first few practices. I bet you hear some guys heaving. Oh, yeah. I mean that was commonplace, at least it was when I played. I can't imagine being... I mean, the pressure is, there's a lot of pressure, man. This is your big break, and you don't want to screw it up, man.
Absolutely.
And you were making $200 a day back then,
that
too.
That's correct, yeah. All that jingle.
Well, Tommy Curran, we've been talking a lot about one particular story. We got a lot to talk about with you, obviously, with camp starting. But can we just start with the Gabe Backus situation? You know, I think we heard Burt Breer yesterday say that this could be a red shirt situation. First of all, can you kind of explain what that could mean? And second of all, whose fault is it that this guy doesn't seem like he's going to be playing this season?
I wouldn't go that far at all. It could be a red shirt season in that, and I would imagine Burt meant that there's a lot for him to overcome in terms of the learning curve. But that being said, if he signs tomorrow, and even with that learning curve, he's going to play. They need edge help. It's not like they can just have him sign and say, we have plenty of players, we don't need you out there. It's going to certainly be a learning curve. He's put himself behind the eight ball with this contract strife. My best understanding of what has occurred right now is it's contractual. It's not physical. And we've seen him posting on social media. This is a second-round pick from Illinois, edge player who they had high hopes of having be a contributor in a huge position of need this year. He had a knee procedure done. Now, when the knee procedure was done was after he came to rookie minicamp, he said, well, I think I have a knee thing here, or I have a knee thing. And the Patriots hadn't found that, nor had anybody else, prior to the draft and prior to the rechecks done right around the draft. So the player that they drafted, in essence, was not the one they signed up for because he had a knee issue that didn't occur under the Patriots' watch. We went and had the procedure done, and I think now the issue isn't whether or not he's healthy. It's the simple fact of, okay, well, we drafted you thinking you were in one condition, and you were indeed in another condition. Where do you fit then in terms of the slot? Because
I'm a little confused here. Are you saying that did he injure himself after he was drafted, or was it an injury that they just didn't find when they before they drafted him?
I don't think it was disclosed. But I don't blame you for being confused. I'm glad you asked. Every team does a recheck. All the players are rechecked prior to the draft, and the Patriots went and drafted him. And after drafting him, he came to the OTAs minicamp, said he had a knee issue, and then that was addressed via surgery. If that injury occurred after the recheck, which seems to be the case, the onus would, I think, be on Akis and his agent to let all the teams know, we had an issue. It's not the same player that you saw. It's not the same player that was done a recheck on. So that's my best understanding of where things stand. So basically, they drafted a player that may not have fully disclosed his condition prior. Again, the team hasn't done a very good job of illuminating us on what the situation is, nor has the agent come out and said anything. So this is my best understanding of where things are, and that's what the hang-up is. The hang-up is not that he is injured beyond repair and may not play, but the Patriots still, because he hasn't been in, have still not had a chance to look and say, okay, well, he's going to be fine. So your hang-up is that. I hope I was clear enough in my understanding of the situation. Was that kind of clear?
Yes, yeah, that does make sense, yes.
ATC, okay. Let's go from the Gabe Akers situation and go to the Gonzo. How do you anticipate the Christian Gonzalez contract, lingering kind of thing out there? How do you feel that's going to get resolved, and what does that look like for training camp?
I think it's really contingent on Devin Witherspoon with Seattle. Another player similar to Gonzalez. When his deal is done, then I think the Patriots and Gonzalez in particular will say, okay, now we have a comp that we're going to work off. You can't really work off of Trent McDuffie. He's a slot corner. Christian plays a different position. I would imagine that Gonzalez wants to be closer to 33 to 35. We've heard mentioned upper 30s, even 40. And Albert, again, does a great job. And he wondered aloud, didn't report it, wondered, but would he want to reset the market and be closer in cost to some of the non-corners out there? And I think that's an interesting counter on the part of a player like Gonzalez. We heard a tackle recently, Paris, played for the Cardinals, might be Paris Johnson, I might have the wrong name. He made the point, he's like, look, I play left tackle, I have to stop guys who are making $40 million. Why aren't I not making $40 million? Jackson Smith and Jigba made signed for $42 million as a wide receiver. Christian Gonzalez had a good Super Bowl, very good postseason in general. That could be his counter. But I think Witherspoon is the domino that they're waiting to see fall. And I think that it does make sense for the Patriots to say, okay, you want to do that? We can do that. We'll wait for that to happen. But generally, Teddy, don't you see these things take longer rather than shorter once it gets to this point? Closer to the season sometimes.
Absolutely. I anticipate it getting done, but, week and a half before the season starts maybe, just at the end of training camp. Yeah.
Same.
So, A.J. Brown, obviously a big story here in the offseason, Tom. How healthy is he, to your knowledge, and like how hard are they going to ride him? Because he does have that knee issue, right, in camp. How much do he and Drake need to work together to get that chemistry up?
That's a great question. It's probably going to be the number one thing that we're all going to try and watch engage going through. We watched with Stephon Diggs last year. He was coming off an ACL, and he participated pretty strenuously for a guy with that situation, and he was out there a lot. I don't imagine that A.J. Brown is going to be limited in any way. They might manage him because he's a player who's getting closer to 30 at this juncture, but they need the reps in terms of establishing that kind of chemistry that's necessary and the communication that's necessary, because we've seen it for decades. If you're running the Patriots offense and Josh McDaniels is at the controls, you want to be able to do things post-snap so that that's when the wide receiver is reading the corner, reading leverage, making a decision afterwards. So we used to see it, Teddy. Brady would go with whichever his top receivers were and work with a cornerback. I remember one of the coolest things I would watch would be Brady working with Gronkowski against Revis and just standing on a field like watching three of the best players that ever played their positions.
Yeah.
And they would just work for 10, 15 minutes during a practice so that they're getting on the same page. And as Brady once said about Gronkowski, I can watch the way he's running down the field from 25 yards away, and just by the tilt of his shoulders, I know which way he's going to go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Those things have to be established.
So, you know, it's interesting, too, you know, with A.J. Brown and everything. Is Kayshon Boutte going to be on this team? What do you think is going to happen?
There's not a huge market around the NFL for Kayshon Boutte right now. Otherwise, I think he might have been dealt. And to me, if I were the Patriots, I would look at that situation and say, we're not going to give him away. He's a productive player. He's a good yards per catch guy. He catches the ball in traffic. He doesn't have drops generally. He would be insurance for A.J. Brown. He would be insurance inside. I don't think the Patriots would be in a massive rush to move on from him. But that is, Rich, one of the things that I look at that's going to be really interesting to see develop. You have A.J. Brown. You have Dobbs. You have Boutte. You have Kyle Williams. You have Mac Hollins. You have Efton Chisholm. You have Pop Douglas. That's seven players, all of whom, again, Efton Chisholm's not going to be screaming if they throw the ball to A.J. Brown, but who could use the football and do some work with it. So divvying up those reps, especially for Dobbs, I think is going to be interesting to see how frequently he gets the ball, because he was signed as a player that prior to A.J. Brown getting here, you said, okay, well, that's where Diggs' targets are going to go. If A.J. Brown's 150, 160 target a year guy, which I think he could be, how many is Dobbs getting? So that's an interesting thing I want to see unfold as well.
Hey, Tom, what do you think about the changes made on offensive line? It's subtle. I mean, you've run in Vera Tucker to play guard, and you moved Jared Wilson from guard to center. How do you think that offensive line, if they all stay healthy and as it's currently constructed, how do you think that has been assembled? Do you like the changes they made in the on that line?
Yeah. I think they can kick the hell out of people if Elijah Vera Tucker stays healthy. You know, you had an issue last year with Will Campbell and Jared Wilson really playing pretty well as rookies next to each other. But then as the season wore along and when defenses got more difficult and the Patriots are going to see a hell of a lot more top 10 defenses this year than they did last year, I think those two guys next to each other were exploited because of their youth and with Campbell's injury that he played with during the playoffs. Now you're going to stick a guy in between them in Vera Tucker, who's got experience, who's an unbelievably talented player. He's just been snake bit by injury. If they can get Wilson in a more natural position, he should be better than Bradbury, who was good at center last year. I think that Campbell is going to be, I think he's a starter level player at the very least, and I think he could be a very good starter at left tackle. So you have that side is locked down. Mike Mwenu should be fine, and I think that from what I've seen, and it'll be fun to watch this too, Caleb Lomu backing up Morgan Moses, the first-round pick. Lomu, I like the way he moved. I thought he certainly fits the suit.
Boy,
so
he looks good.
I'm looking forward to seeing him.
He looks the part, doesn't he? I mean, he's just huge.
He does. He's huge.
Yeah.
So Tommy, I want to quickly jump back to something Ted was talking about. Like, how much influence does Mike Vrabel have on the roster? Like, this whole Christian Gonzalez situation, do you think that he's got any kind of say or influence on the crafts as to whether or not they end up giving him that extension or they look elsewhere?
It's funny you said crafts. I was talking to Phil Perry earlier today just about this. And, you know, he mentioned how I think a lot of people are under the perception that it's the crafts. I cannot imagine that Jonathan or Robert are sitting across the table from the agent or on the phone with them talking about what the numbers are. That's something that you've asked, you know, Ryan Cowden and Elliot Wolf to take care of, and they have a budget to work with. And I would imagine Mike's just kind of walking in and saying, what's the status? That should be the way it goes. There's a budget there. Everyone should know that this player is going to make between $32 and $36 million. How you divvy it up and how you give them the, you know, the bonus, how much guaranteed money is up to them. I think in Vrabel's, at least the way that he has portrayed it, in the way that he has spoken to us, is that's them, that's their job, just keep me posted on it. So I just don't think that – I think the pecking order works, Rich, in other words. Instead of Mike just, you know, knock, 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 can we just get him in camp? I don't care what it costs. I just don't think that would happen.
Did you read anything into those comments that Robert Kraft said about Mike Vrabel at the Fanatics Fest when he went, I think it was like, sweetheart, I know he'll be our coach for years to come. Like, he was, like, really emphatic on letting you know that they are all in on Mike Vrabel. Did you buy that? Did you get the same sense?
Yes, I do. I buy it. I do buy it. I think he's done the job long enough. Kraft, I mean, has been an owner long enough. He's seen every manner and stripe of human failing and misstep. And generally speaking, in my experience with him, he's got a pretty good heart. And if you look him in the eye and say, I effed up, I'm sorry, I need to work on some things, I'm going to be a better person, he's going to say, look, okay, well, I wish that hadn't happened. I wish you well. Please go do the job well. I truly believe that would be the case. Ted?
Agreed. 100%. Yep.
It doesn't seem to be affecting Vrabel. Like, we heard this, the speech that he made to some of the rookies. Like, he seems like the same Mike Vrabel, well, right?
But when you get the owner to back you like that, and you feel you get the support he got from Robert Kraft, I mean, I think it allows him to be freed up and get back to, you know, being the guy he was before all that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that you're – unfortunately, we all wear masks wherever we are.
Mm-hmm.
Home masks, there's your work mask, there's your coach mask, there's your talking to the fellow coach's mask. And I think Mike is adept. Again, I'm going to defer to Ted because I love having the opportunity to talk to Ted about somebody that he knows more intimately than I do. But I think Mike isn't artificial or inauthentic, but I do think that he is able to – code switch, if you will, pretty quickly. And if he's talking to a bunch of 22-year-olds who just got drafted, he's not going to be sitting there going, oh, no, what do they think of me?
Right.
He's got a job to do.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, happy football season, man. This is nice.
I know.
Finally, we can stop speculating about, well, I guess we still have the Diana Rossini thing that has not yet been settled. But outside of that, everything else seems to be kind of falling into place. The Gonzalez thing is going to be wild, wild to see what they end up doing with that, whether he plays, whether he doesn't play. I mean, listen, the drama never stops. The NFL is honestly 12 months out of the year, but this is where it gets good, Tommy Curran. This is where it gets good.
And you know what? By the time I talk to you next week, they're going to go at it for the next 5 days, but it's kind of a ramp-up period. Wednesday, I think, is off, and then Thursday should be kind of a legitimate practice. So by the time I talk to you next Thursday afternoon, should have some little paint swapping down low, maybe some goal line activity I can tell you about.
Hell yeah, Tommy. All right, Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boss, thanks for coming out.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, take care, guys.
Real quick, I just want to say one thing. ESPN could take note of something that just happened there. Ryan Clark got in trouble and got fired, and the justification seems to be because he said to Pete Schrager, who is very good, I like Pete Schrager, he said, you know, your opinion is this, but it's the non-player in you that thinks that. As a player, I think this. Did you hear Tommy Curran saying to Ted, that's why I like talking to you, because you've played the game and you give insight?
Mm-hmm.
Tommy Curran is the most connected, most respected reporter out there covering the Patriots. No one doubts his knowledge of the game, his cred. But even right there, he asked Ted, but there's certain aspects I'll never get because you played it.
Mm-hmm.
And ESPN seems to think that's a bad thing, and where they should be embracing that.
Well, McAfee played. He was a punter, you know, so he's important. Punters are important too, right?
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. So there you go. All right, 617-779-7937. We'll be back in two. Oh, it is 93.7 WEEI, Rich, Ken, Ted Johnson, 617-779-7937. It's always good having Tommy Curran on.
Oh, the best.
I love the way Tom describes the game.
And yes.
He has a really, I think, creative and fascinating way of making his points that aren't, the typical, ways of doing saying it. So I always appreciate his. And I'll say this, I work with Tom and I work with Phil and Holly and all those guys. Those guys know ball. They defer to me, but I defer to them. These guys, you've been covering a game this long. There's more information out there. There's more quantifiable evidence and data to make you, someone who covers the game and observes the game, a smarter a reporter. Mm-hmm. And so these guys, just because they didn't play doesn't mean These guys are experts in the game, and I give them a lot of credit because they've been following this game a long time, and they do their homework. And I love the way Tom talks football. It's different than a lot of other people.
I love Ted.
I love you, Michael.
Well, you threaten them all behind the scenes.
No,
I mean,
that's true. Not true.
But that is what ESPN should be embracing instead of shunning right there for that very reason. You can be somebody who knows the game, you know, as well as anybody like Tommy Curran does and, you know, didn't play in the NFL. At least he didn't ever tell me he'd play in the NFL. But there's certain things you're just not going to know. There's certain like emotional aspects. Like I was saying, you know, if somebody gets injured and you're in the locker room with that player and you know that, you know, their career might be over. What is it like to stand next to that person and the human side of it? The part, the story about you throwing up, what you just said on your first day there.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, like, I did. I don't know if I've ever really admitted that.
Did Diossi apologize for putting all that pressure on him?
He's kidding me. They feel sorry for me one bit, man.
Vets are probably got their ear to the bathroom going, they're all chucking again.
Yeah, really. Did you have to get up in front of the vets and like sing the fight song and all that?
I did. I sure did. Yeah. Vincent Brown made me sing at dinner time. Yep. He was, the thing I love about Vincent is he's one of the more scarier looking dudes. Like his resting face is like terrifying.
It's killing.
Yeah. But I think like even with that terrifying look, I think he felt bad that he made me sing, but nonetheless, he still made me sing at dinner time. You know,
what'd you sing? Would you remember the song?
Dude, I was singing, because I only know Pearl Jam songs. I don't know. I'm singing.
Let me hear a little.
No. I'm not riffing. No,
that's the bit.
You're not Vincent Brown. You're not Vincent Brown. Oh, Teddy Vedder's pretty good.
It's Teddy Vedder over here. Just give me a little bit of even flow.
No, even flow. No, I'm not going to do it. But here's the thing about those guys. It would be like if not these guys, but the what makes maybe a player a little defensive about someone who didn't play in their commentary is if sometimes the insiders, they get information from the team. And they talk about it as if they know because someone from the inside told them.
Well, Bedard's in the front office,
right? So it'd be like Bedard arguing with me about something I feel strongly about, but he's so strong in his retort because he can't say it that he was told that by somebody in the team, and so he's very confident in his opinion, and it's kind of like, well, wait a minute, you know, why are you fighting me on this? Like you're acting like you know. But you do because you were told. And just because you were told that from the team doesn't mean you're right. They could be misleading you. That's
yes,
the
they
thing.
Could be using you as a tool.
Yes,
absolutely.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Yes.
There's no question. And as I said before, if I'm a reporter, even if I know I'm being used as a tool, I still report that somebody on the inside told me that. I think that that's like our job.
Not everybody does that, Rich. Not everybody does that. You know that, right?
I do, but I think that that's the right thing to do because literally somebody from the inside said that. And if they told me to say it or they told me that information, I think it's my job to report that it's not what I think is going to happen. It's what literally somebody inside the organization told me.
I don't know how many guys do that all the time. They might on some, but I think there's a lot of stuff they're told that they use as their own personal, kind of use it as their own personal opinion.
I don't like that. Now, I'm not a big fan of that.
Vincent Brown's nickname was The Undertaker?
Unbelievable nickname.
What a great nickname.
Oh, the best. I couldn't believe it. I got here. I was like, dude, I'm playing next to The Undertaker. That's one of the all-time most badass nicknames I've ever heard, man.
Yeah. Did you ever get a nickname? You never? It was just Ted.
You know what? Cementhead Ted. Ted the Head. Yeah. Oh, so Head, those were my.
Was that after you broke the helmet you got that name?
I had that before. I had that nickname before. Yeah.
Yep. Still can't believe you broke it.
Keghead Ted. So
I'm not calling you those, though. It doesn't feel right.
Yeah, you're not to my face. Behind my back.
Just behind his back. Let's go to Tim in Hanover on line two. Tim, what's up, buddy? How you doing?
Hey, Tim.
Guys, it's totally football season right around the corner, and I'm loving every second of what you guys are saying. Mm-hmm. You guys, I tell you what, Mike Vrabel is going to be an unbelievable guy. He hasn't changed. He's the same coach. He's going to be the same coach, same player that did play the game. He's coming here. And now outside that, he's working on whatever he had outside. That's different. But when it comes to the game, he's going to take care of business. Tom Curran, same thing. When you guys said that, I agree 100% with you. He is unbelievable. He reminds me, I lived in L.A. He reminds me of Jim Hill. They're excellent at their craft. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, he's lovely to listen to.
Mm-hmm. We're lucky to have him. I mean, Tommy Curran is a very good reporter. Not every city's got, and we're lucky to actually have several good reporters. Like, I like Mike Reese a lot. I think Mike Reese is a little more facts, stats, but he always has a good report after the game. I think Reese is good, but I think Tommy might be the best one locally.
Well, I can tell you ratings show that, and they have since we've had Tom on. And by the way, not to say they're lucky, but what a time to come in and start covering the team. Right at the start for Curran.
97.
97, you take it over and you run through six Super Bowls?
Yeah, it's incredible,
geez,
man.
Jeez, what a run.
That's wild. All right, 617-779-7937. We will take your calls next. And there's a certain member of the Red Sox organization taking an undeserved victory lap. We will talk about that next. Oh, it is 93.7 WBEI. Rich Certainly, Ken Laird, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson. You can call us at 617-779-7937. You know what? The Red Sox saved our summer. They really did. It was looking bad for a while, and the last couple of weeks have been just fun as hell. And
Rich, do we care? Is that, are we satisfied, or is it like, now that they made our summer, do we, anything else is gravy, or do we, now do we hold them to a higher standard now moving forward?
I like that question. I do, because I think that right now you have to hold Craig Breslow to a higher standard on what he's going to do here at the trade deadline. I don't think there's any question. You gotta go get it, baby. You gotta make a move that is worthy of what this team did for you over the last several weeks. They pulled themselves out of the absolute trash and gave you a show and they sent a message that you need to believe in this team. They have gotten out there and had every reason to quit, and now invest in them. Because they're a team that is in the playoffs, and my belief has always been that if you are a team at the trade deadline that is in the playoffs, has a definite need for something, and you're not fooling yourself that they can do something and potentially make it to the World Series, then you have to invest. You absolutely have to invest. Mm-hmm. It's a simple equation. Go in. And who are you saying this today, Ken, that there was a report that there are several different positions that they are looking at now?
Yeah, so two reports, one new one from Rosenthal, which we can get to, but Mark Feinstein from MLB said they're in the market for a right-handed hitting catcher, a middle infield / DH, so one or the other, and a high leverage relief pitcher.
I love all three of them, maybe even in that order. I would put the DH first, I think. They need a big bat, obviously. Who is it? Left-handed catcher? Was that the first?
No,
right-handed catcher. So they've been
right-handed catcher. Okay.
Hunter Goodman of Colorado has been a name that's thrown out there a lot. They're an obvious seller. He's got 31 homers. Actually, he's hit more homers away from Coors Field, shockingly.
It's ironic.
Yeah, 18 of them, and he's hitting .282 on the road. So he's a younger guy, so maybe that's one. But Rosenthal just posted this at The Athletic, and just read the start of it. Picture Zach Neto in a Boston Red Sox uniform. The idea, at least from the Red Sox perspective, is not far-fetched. After expressing interest in the L.A. Angels shortstop last offseason, they continue to view him as a strong fit, according to people briefed on their discussions, but granted anonymity to speak freely.
The Red Sox have a shortstop on the roster that's making $25 million. Now, he's hurt right now, mm-hmm. but is that what am I missing there?
I think they would ship him out. I guess you could move him to second, because that's where he started with the Bogarts overlap. But
that makes more sense.
I'm sure they would love to dump his contract somewhere. Yeah, but they would have to probably package it with prospects to do it. So,
and the Red Sox possess all the assets to make a deal here. It's not like their cupboard is bare. They got guys to deal,
including Roman. Rich, would you trade Roman Anthony right now? I think that's going to be the one where I don't know if they would need him to get Zach Neto. Hopefully not. But like, if you're going to be really big fish hunting, big game hunting, mm-hmm. I guess you need to consider. I'm sure people would ask for Roman anyway.
Man, emotionally right now you would say yes, because obviously he's been kind of a weird story this season. They've done all this without him. It seemed like he for punitive reasons they sent him down to Florida. He's been a huge distraction, I think, for this team. So yeah, not really thinking about it. The emotional part of me is like, trade him to bring somebody in, but just think about what this guy was supposed to be at the beginning of the season.
Exactly.
Like, he was the face of this franchise. And I don't know whether or not he's just going through a bad time, and he's legitimately hurt, and it's killing him, and he can't wait to get back. And once he does, oh, my God, this team has immediately hit the Nospin, and this is exactly what you've needed. It just seems like it wouldn't be a wise move unless you really got something of value to get rid of, to give up on Roman Anthony this soon.
Yeah. And I, by the way, you heard Chad Tracy tell the morning show he's staying at the Homewood Suites in Fort Myers, so they're putting it up at excellent accommodations. I thought it was interesting that they named the particular establishment, you know, like, hey, here's proof. We sent him there. He's at a hotel. It's not five star.
If I'm Roman, I'm changing my name to, you know, something else, man. I'm not using my real name.
But it's, again, it's like they're punishing him. You know, they're putting his business out there for everybody
That's
to
true.
Hear.
That's true.
Yep. But during this whole run, we've talked about how, you know, you give Sam Kennedy and Craig Breslow a little bit of credit. Those guys have faced the press, and they've taken the bullets, and it got kind of depressing to listen to for a while, but I remember for a while I had no sympathy towards them because they were very cocky while their team sucked. They were being very, like, that was the, oh, well, I guess Dr. Greg Hill and right. Sam Kennedy, like, mocking his whole true sources about Roman Anthony's hand. And but then they changed their tune, and at that from that point on, I gave them a little bit of respect. Like, they are being realists. They know this sucks. They know the team's not very good. And when he said he might have to pivot, I was like, all right. Well, at least they're not. They don't think we're idiots. Now, Breslow has said a couple things that made me think he thought we were idiots, like Roman Anthony not having room for him in the training. That thing is that's the dumbest thing I think I've ever heard any general manager say. But they have every reason to be happy about this run, and they have every reason to spike the football if things turn out well for this team. One guy who has been missing is this gentleman, who just happened to like poke his head out of the hole once the team was winning. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I know, Ken, you're on top of all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
I have not seen him speak while the team was in the crapper, right? Like, this is like one of the first times he's spoken this season, right?
Well, Tom Werner speaks a lot more frequently than John does. Like, he's been on, I've talked to him before on air, and he's come on with us usually before every season, and he did the full throttle thing, infamously. So he's out there some, but I think I have to admit I have not heard him to this point. This is the first time I've heard him this season.
Okay, so Stiz, if you got the clip, this is him 2 days ago, I think, right when they were about to tie the record, rather.
Right.
Let's take a listen.
How much fun are you having?
So much fun. Listen, winning matters. And we had a pretty scratchy beginning of the season, but we always believed that this team was a playoff contender. And it's just nice. Obviously, we've dealt with some injuries, but everybody has injuries. And I see the team is playing up to its potential right now. I mean, we always knew we had a very strong pitching staff.
Go away!
Both starters and our bullpen.
No, he's talking. This is what you wanted. You wanted the owner to speak. I mean, come on now.
No, I wanted the owner to take accountability. I wanted him to speak when things are going bad. I want him to speak when Alex Cora was traded. This is a guy who's coming out. Like, all of a sudden, you know what it is? It's like you dumped a girl. And all of a sudden she went and got hot. Like, she just got like all sorts of, like, you know, she grew her hair out, her skin cleared up, she got implants, and all of a sudden you're coming out, it's like, oh, I loved you the entire time. You were always beautiful. Hey, what with me?
He probably was traveling, it was shoulder season. These guys like to go to Europe.
Pitching. He didn't say the team, he just said, you know, the pitching has been really good. You know, we always knew we had good pitching, is kind of true, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's right. That's right.
Did he start a cheer by any chance?
Oh. Let's go, Red.
It's a magical day for us, the end of a remarkable season, and I would just like to start a cheer. Let's go, Red Sox! Let's go, Red Sox!
Go, Red Sox!
That last one's the best.
Larry, how gratifying is this for you?
The silence. I didn't mean to laugh at the silence.
Oh, sorry, I stepped on it.
But after Lucchino, she's like, oh, Red Sox.
It's oh, like Red Sox.
Listen.
Larry, how gratifying is this for you?
That may be the best clip that's ever been clipped.
They're sensitive when that's played, I can tell you that. They don't like that one.
Sure. Oh, really?
No, yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would definitely, whatever you do, Stiz, do not play that one more time.
Let's go, Red Sox. Let's go, Red Sox. Let's go, Red Sox.
Go, Red Sox.
Nobody's saying anything.
Larry, how gratifying is this for you?
It's so good.
I haven't heard the extended cut in a while. That's a great job.
The extended cut's the best part.
Yeah, that's excellent.
It's just like, oh, Red Sox. And it's like, I mean, you almost, it's almost like an episode of The Office. You can hear like a cricket, I think.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, other than those comments from Tom, I feel like everyone else is kind of got it in perspective. No one's really going over their skis and saying, you know, we told you so. And I like that. I like that it feels as if they're keeping it all in perspective. Maybe, you know, Tom Warner's comments aside, everyone else seems to kind of get it.
Well, Durant kind of did, right? He was like, I told you, man.
Durant actually did say that stuff back then. Like, I think that Durant, you know, whether or not it was false confidence back in the day, he also deserves to peacock a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
He's been saying that.
You're right.
I'm not going to crush him. The Warner thing just drove me crazy because it's like, dude, now that they're about to set the record, you show up and you talk to the media. Mm-hmm. No, you get no candy from us, sir. Mm-hmm. You get no kind of praise. Breslow, you do that little wild and crazy guy dance. You do that because you've earned it. And I can't believe him. We'll see the trade deadline, but man, there's going to be a lot of people like me who are going to look back and go, "We could not have been more wrong. Could not have been more wrong." So good on them.
And and by the way, now there are multiple. Remember how we heard the clips from Breslow, and it was like, "Is he really going to make a trade?" He was very lukewarm. But we've had Passan, Feinsand, and now Rosenthal, three big names in the reporting world, say they're aggressive, interested in big name, big swing. Like, so now the pressure's on. You better deliver.
And we were saying the same things this time last year. Joe Ryan, baby.
Were we, I guess?
It was a fait accompli. Oof.
It's true. And you know what, Ted? My biggest fear is that they are going to do next to nothing, make like a half measure, and they're going to say, well, it's because we believe our injured players are going to be coming back soon, and that's going to be essentially like making a trade.
See, I think there's part of them that feels like they can make that argument, you know, because they're, I mean, for, you know, you got Trevor Story, you know, Roman Anthony, Marcelo Meyer. Those guys are, you know, Garrett Crochet are maybe, you know, some of those guys are coming back. And they're going to say, you know, look how good we are without those guys, and they're coming back. So we don't need to add. We got guys that we believe in that are going to come back from being injured.
You are taking a massive chance if you do that, because, I mean, Roman Anthony, who knows what's going on there? It doesn't look at all like Garrett Crochet is coming back anytime soon. Yeah. Garrett Crochet, of all of them, is the one that scares me. I mean, he could be out. He's most likely going to be out all season from the stuff we're hearing. I mean, that's not a definite, but, I mean, look where he is now. He's nowhere near getting ready to come back.
Is it worth it? He pitched twice as much last year as he ever pitched, more than that. And now he's missing all of this year. So it's kind of, I mean.
You got to consider it, Ted. That's a great point. Yeah. You got to consider whether that was part of the reason.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be interesting. All I know is I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm excited for Craig Breslow because I do believe that they are inspired now. I think that they, hopefully, I would like to think that they truly appreciate what they just saw and what this team just gave them. Because don't let these guys down. They just busted their ass to get where they are.
Right.
Because that was a crap hole they were in, and they got themselves out of it. 617-779-7937. I got a Patriots question for you, Teddy J, as we're about to start camp next week. We'll get to that right after this. Oh, yeah.
Here we go, Teddy. Come on.
Go, Ted.
No, I'm not singing. I don't. No, no, no. I don't dance. No, no, no.
You did for that.
Made of concrete. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Great story, how I met Eddie, but we don't have to go through that. I've already told it a million times on air, but Eddie Vedder.
Million and one.
5'3", man. 5'3". Small guy.
Really? Little, so he's three apples tall?
I couldn't believe it. Yeah, Bangor, Maine years ago. I couldn't believe it. I was backstage. We watched the concert from the side on this big-ass speaker, me and Swamp Chicken, Todd Collins. We had practice the next day, and the guy that took us there, that promised us that we'd go backstage with Eddie Vedder, he lied to us. We knock on the back door to the entrance of the whatever in Bangor, Maine is, that arena there. And the manager opens up. He looks at the guy that brought us there, and he goes, "Who are you? What? Huh?" And he basically says, "No, you can't come in, but you two guys, yeah. Come on, Ted. Come on, Todd." We went in, and I thought I was going to meet Eddie Vedder. It was told that we were going to hang out before the concert, but that wasn't the case. And then I brought Eddie all this signed autograph memorabilia. I was so excited to meet Eddie. I thought he'd enjoy. And we were leaving, and I hadn't met him yet. And I was like, dude, I'm going to go back in one more time and see if I walk in. There's Eddie walking around the corner. And I'm like, Eddie, Ted Johnson, I'm a linebacker of the Patriots. And couldn't have been nicer, signed a shirt for me. I gave him a jersey sign from Bledsoe, and it was super, super nice, and it was great. The odd thing was that a big fan of his was Rodman, Dennis Rodman. And he was there at the concert.
Whoa.
And, dude, I couldn't believe – he gets up on stage, and they're singing Alive, and Dennis Rodman puts Eddie on his shoulders. And Eddie falls backwards, and I thought he was going to crack his head. And Dennis catches his ankles before he hits the ground.
Ooh.
And so he sings the rest of the song upside down.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm just blown away that Dennis Rodman was in Bangor, Maine.
Can you believe
that? I had that same thought.
Dennis Rodman and his companion, easy on the eyes. But
Carmen Electra? Electra?
It was not Carmen. But I thought the same thing. Of all the venues, of all the concerts you could go see Eddie play at, it was Bangor, Maine. There's Dennis Rodman, so pretty funny. But yeah, good story.
I don't have a cell.
Damn.
But I was in this. We took a limo there. I'm in the limo to go back, and I thought, you know what? Damn it! I got all this stuff. I'm gonna go win one more time. And right when I walked in, boom! There he comes around the corner.
Do you still have the shirt?
I still have the shirt hung up. I thought I texted it to you guys. No. Yeah, it's
funny. I've learned that a lot of athletes would love to be rock stars, and a lot of rock stars want to be athletes.
Oh, tale as old as time, I'd say.
Yep.
Yeah, and so when you, like, out of all the people that you've met, like, who were you most surprised was, like, a huge fan of yours and the Patriots, out of all the people that you got to meet? I mean, because I'm sure you've met so many at all the different Patriots stuff and at the ESPYs. Like, was there ever anyone that you were just like, wow, I can't believe this person knows who I am?
The Wedding Crashers, you know, Owen.
Vince Vaughn? Owen
Wilson? Owen Wilson, very, very nice, and fans of, you know, I'd still like to meet Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. I'd like to know if they know who I am. I just think those guys kind of came up when we were doing our thing. So I've never met them, but I'd be curious. I told you, Billy Bush, big fan. I met him at the urinals, at the ESPYs.
Actually,
yeah.
Vince Vaughn, legitimate great guy. So
good
he's
dude.
One person that, you know, everyone likes to tell their stories of celebrities they met who are a-holes. Well, I like telling the stories that I've met of people who are shockingly nice. And Vince Vaughn was doing this thing one time where he'd already made all this money. It was like after Wedding Crashers and everything. And he ended up just wanting to do something fun with his friends. So he got his like four favorite comedians and he took them on tour. And it was called like Vince Vaughn's Wild West Comedy Show or something like that. And I remember I went to go interview him, and I went to the venue, and he invited me and Mary on his bus, and he kept drinking with him. He kept like, you want to do some more drinks? We might have sat on his bus and drank for 2 hours, and I knew that I was getting drunk when I looked up, and I'm like, dude, you're the guy from A Christmas Story. And sure enough, his best friend is Peter Billingsley, the kid from A Christmas Story.
Oh, damn, no kidding.
Wow.
And he looks just like the kid from A Christmas Story. But at that point, he was like 40 years old, I think, when he was on that.
You know what? Now that I have a second to think about it. I've met a couple guys that kind of blew me. Were very, very cool. I met Kevin Costner.
Oh, wow.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah, he had a band that he toured, believe it or not. He came through Houston. We went and hung out with him backstage. I got a cool picture. And then Billy Corgan. Billy Corgan played when he was solo at the Wank Theater. And my buddy Chris Nowinski and I went backstage. I'll never forget it. I was so excited to meet Billy Corgan. Billy told everyone to get out of the room, and it was just me and Chris and Billy Corgan, and he was just in this big bathrobe, and he just had this big bowl of salad, and he was after the concert, and he's just ravaging, he going through the salad, and I wanted to like come over and just kind of close the bathrobe a little bit,
you saw Billy's Corgan,
Hey, man, dude. He's telling Courtney love stories. It was phenomenal. Nicest guy, Billy Corgan, nicest guy ever, man. Really?
Did you see his dark like purple hand?
I did not look that close. I was just kind of looking all around the top of his head. You know.
So I got to meet him once, and that was the most shocking thing is that he for years covered it up like he didn't know it.
Yeah.
And he's got.
Yeah, I don't know what that's.
It's called like red wine syndrome or something. You know, he's been very open about it lately, but it's like dark red. Like it's something, it's like a skin condition that he's been hiding most of his life.
Yeah.
And I remember when I saw it, I was like, I didn't say anything, but it was like, oh my God, I I thought he was breaking out, but he actually has that. Smashing Pumpkins, they're one of the better bands
love
of
them.
That era.
Love them,
no
man.
Question. Yep. No question. Yep. All right. Well, that's kind of cool. I mean, it's got to be awesome when you're on a team and you get to meet some of the people that you never thought you'd meet.
So true.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Was that your right. Pat's question for Ted? It's going to have to wait till tomorrow.
Oh, man, I do, but it's going to have to wait. It's a good one, too.
All right, well, we'll just remember for tomorrow.
I will. It's going to take a while. But, hey, as I said, football season is here. We had Tommy Curran on today. It's good stuff. All right, 617-779-7937. We will take your calls back in 2 minutes.